Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Hannah Pagel. Our guest this week is Senator Deb Fischer, who joins us to discuss the latest on crop insurance, biofuels, and EPA's new tailpipe emissions rule. But first, here's this week's headlines. The latest consumer price index shows the cost of eating at home did not change for the second straight month. Lower prices for dairy and grain products offset higher prices for beef, pork, chicken, and eggs. The overall CPI rose by nearly 0.5% because of higher costs for housing and gasoline. USDA finalized changes to the Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition Program earlier this week. The changes permanently increased the fruit and vegetable benefit Congress approved in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. The rule also includes cuts to the amount of milk and dairy products you can buy through the program. However, substitutes like plant-based yogurts and cheeses, as well as lactose-free milk, must be made available. And finally, there's still a chance to get a farm bill passed before the end of spring, and lawmakers in both the House and Senate are working to get it done. House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn Thompson says he plans to move a bipartisan bill before Memorial Day. He says he's found a way to pay for changes to commodity programs that ag groups have been asking for, while not shifting any money from the nutrition title or from IRA conservation funding, which Democrats want to protect. Meanwhile, in the Senate, Republican John Hoeven introduced a bill that would increase premium subsidies for crop insurance policies. Up to 85% of a farmer's revenue risk would be covered without jeopardizing their eligibility for Farm Bill commodity programs. Senator Hoeven's bill differs from Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow's plan, which would make all farmers eligible for a policy consistent with the STAX program. However, farmers who sign up for STAX can enroll the same commodity-based acreage in the Farm Bill's two main commodity programs, ARC and PLC. Senator Deb Fischer also sits on the Senate Ag Committee and is a co-sponsor to Senator Hoeven's crop insurance bill. She says Republicans want to strengthen the farm safety net.
It's extremely important that we get a farm bill done. I'm looking forward to being able to support one in the future. But we're trying to work with our Democrat colleagues on it and have them realize we need more farm in the farm bill. There's a lot of priorities that I hear from Nebraskans, ag producers in Nebraska, that haven't been addressed in this farm bill. We see the Democrats, their priorities are in there with climate. But we're not seeing really a strong safety net provision in the farm bill. We don't see anything on trade. We don't see too much on research. Those are three really strong investments that I want to see become part of a farm bill, because that's what it should be. This is what ag producers are looking for, and to be able to advance those is extremely important.
So House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn Thompson told AgriPulse this week that he expects a farm bill to work its way out of committee before Memorial Day weekend. But on the Senate side, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, in his letter to colleagues, never mentioned the farm bill. So given all of that, what are your thoughts?
The priorities we have are to make sure that we come up with a good farm bill that'll have support across the board. And as I said, as Republicans on the Ag Committee, we want to make sure that we're going to stand strong for ag producers, for farmers, for ranchers, for rural communities all across this country. We haven't seen that yet from our colleagues on the committee. I think Senator Schumer is probably being somewhat realistic, knowing that we have to agree as a committee before that's going to happen. As you know, the Senate's different than the House. We have to come together on things if you want to have a strong vote to be able to pass this. I want to have a strong vote on a farm bill. That's vital to be able to bring us together in the Senate and be able to do that. Senator Schumer, I think he's waiting to see what we do in committee.
So you've been pushing for more transparency in cattle markets, specifically for packers to do more cash purchasing. But cattle prices have gone up significantly since you have introduced your legislation. And, the conversation around it has seemed to kind of die down a little bit. So what's the latest on this legislation, and is there even still a need for it?
Oh, this bill has never been about prices. Never about prices. We're talking about reforming the market. We're talking about having that transparency. We continue to gain co-sponsors. We have about a quarter of all senators now on both sides of the aisle on this bill. And so it hasn't died down. Maybe in the press it's died down just because prices have gone up. But remember, this is about changing how we view the market to be able to have reforms made so that cattle producers can make better informed decisions. And in order to do that, you need to have a cash market so that you can understand what's happening in that market. So we continue to grow our co-sponsors. Senator Tester is working to get the bill up on the floor. He's working with Senator Schumer. So I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to get this up and get it done because we have great support for it.
We'll be right back with more from Senator Fisher right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. EPA has released new tailpipe emission standards for light and medium duty vehicles, which is clearing the path for more electric vehicles on the road. Senator Deb Fisher is a strong supporter of biofuels and says the agency has overlooked a prime resource.
You know, we have so many opportunities when it comes to biofuels. And when we're trying to deal with an administration that has a focus on electric vehicles, an unrealistic focus, I would say, on electric vehicles, that doesn't help the biofuels industry in many ways. When you have rules and regulations that are out there that would require zero emissions and to lower car manufacturers to lower their emissions, it forces them to look at electric vehicles. Thankfully, we're seeing, you know, some pushback there from automakers, from Ford, from GM, from Volkswagen. We're seeing some pushback, and they're stepping back from being forced into producing these electric vehicles because they know the market doesn't support them. And the more information that comes out about all the problems from where the minerals that are needed for the batteries, where they're mined, how they're mined, all the way through to the weight of the vehicles, the safety concerns that we see because of the weight of the vehicles, on and on and on. What do you do with the batteries when they're dead? And so I think the public's becoming more aware, our automakers are becoming more aware, and there's just not a market for them now.
So there's been a lot of excitement around sustainable aviation fuel as a potential market for corn ethanol. Could that offset any loss for demand of ethanol in autos? Some economists are thinking it might.
I think it's obviously a wonderful possibility and a wonderful opportunity that we have for corn ethanol to be able to do that. Again, we need to be able to grow that market. It helps rural communities, it helps ag producers, and it's better for the environment. One thing I worry about with the administration is their focus on allowing Brazilian ethanol that comes from sugarcane into this country under their regulations, but yet our biofuels with soybeans and corn are not allowed under their new regulations for climate. And that's another instance where I think we need to push back. Why wouldn't we use an American produced energy fuel to be able to meet the needs and meet the needs for our environment instead of looking to Brazil?
Mm-hmm. If Republicans can get control of Congress and the White House in this next election cycle, do you see them rolling back or eliminating the new incentives that the Biden administration has rolled out for electric vehicles?
I think we have to start making decisions that are based on science and not emotion. I believe with the Biden administration, what we've seen is a wish list of what they think is going to address concerns that they may have. You know, let's look at the science. Let's make science-based decisions. So yes, I think we are going to see a lot of those be pushed back. We're seeing the market pushing back now from car manufacturers to consumers who realize, you know, that how long is their electric vehicle battery going to last, and should they trade it in before it gives up the ghost? You know, it's just a number of things there that we're learning about electric vehicles and other requirements that have come from this administration that make absolutely no sense.
Senator Fisher, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with this week's panel discussion, but first, our Andrew Huneke takes a look at the U.S. trade deficit in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
America's agricultural trade deficit continues to expand with no sign of slowing down. This chart shows American ag imports and exports, as well as the trade deficit from fiscal years 2019 to 2023. The deficit is represented by the light blue bars on the bottom of the chart. You can see in 2019, things began to shift from a surplus to a deficit. Since then, there's been a deficit for three of the past five fiscal years. The deficit for FY 2023 was $16.6 billion, and USDA projects the FY 2024 deficit to be a record high of more than $30 billion. Some of the reasons for the deficit include lower commodity prices and a strong dollar, which has made imported products like fruit and wine cheaper. Doug McCaleb is the chief ag trade negotiator for the U.S. He tells AgriPulse the Biden administration is doing a good job of removing barriers to American ag exports despite the deficit. You can find more of his comments on our website, agripulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Huneke.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
You know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time. Take us wherever you go. Subscribe on agripulse.com or on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we are excited to get into our panel discussion today, where we will be talking all things biofuels and electric vehicles. Joined this week with Jeff Cooper with the Renewable Fuels Association and Ben Prohaska with the Electrification Coalition. And Jeff, my first question is to you. So EPA released new tailpipe emission standards for light and medium duty vehicles, which is opening up the door for more electric vehicles on the road. But RFA has long pointed out that there are other options to deliver lower carbon emissions at a far lower cost. You know, what is the biofuels industry doing to gain more traction for your argument?
Well, first of all, Hannah, I want to say we share the goals of the tailpipe emissions regulation that was just finalized by EPA. We of course want to help reduce carbon emissions from the transportation sector, but we don't think that new regulation from EPA is the right way to do it. We think it's a misguided approach. We think it's intellectually dishonest. And frankly, we think they're going to fall short of accomplishing their goals because they are locking in or forcing automakers to lock in on one technology, battery electric vehicles, to the exclusion of other technologies like biofuels that can help reduce emissions faster and more economically in many cases for consumers. So we're a little frustrated with that regulation. We're going to continue to weigh in with the administration about the benefits of biofuels like ethanol, which today is reducing carbon emissions by roughly 50% compared to gasoline. And again, there's no room for ethanol in this new regulation adopted by EPA, and that's a frustration for us.
Jeff, how do you see biofuel-based and hybrid vehicles playing a role toward a cleaner energy environment?
Well, we actually have at RFA a plug-in hybrid electric flex fuel vehicle that has external charging, but it also has a liquid fuel tank that is full of E85, which is that 85% ethanol blend. We see that as really the best of both worlds. It's combining the advantages and the benefits of electrification and low carbon biofuels in one vehicle. And that really alleviates some of the range anxiety concerns that electric vehicle drivers have. It's a lower cost option, cost per mile, cost of purchase. And frankly, it delivers the same or better environmental performance than a strictly battery electric vehicle. So those are the types of technologies that we think the government and EPA specifically should be encouraging and rewarding through these programs like the tailpipe standards. But unfortunately, they're not doing that.
And Ben, bringing you into the conversation here, do you agree that there could be a bigger role for hybrid cars fueled by biofuels as we transition to more electric vehicles?
Ultimately, I think there's going to be a lot of room for biofuels to play a role moving forward, especially in the hardest to abate sectors. You know, when we get into the idea of maritime, we get into air travel, we think about heavier duty vehicles. Those are things where the ramp ultimately was set up in a way that was thoughtful about the idea that we need to incorporate an all of the above solution. Now, clearly, the Electrification Coalition prioritizes transportation electrification because of our economic and national security impacts of oil dependency. And so, you know, we've always maintained that there's a lot of different ways to think about that. At the end of the day, plugging into the grid provides us with the greatest amount of flexibility in what that future looks like for how we power the way we move.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Register now for the 2024 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. This summit takes place on June 4th in Sacramento and through our virtual experience. See the latest information and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Welcome back. Our panel discussion continues with the Electrification Coalition's Ben Prohaska discussing how electric vehicles can lower costs to the U.S. consumer.
I think there's a lot of different things, and I think the data kind of, you know, the idea of stalling isn't exactly correct. They're still up 50% in 2023. We saw 1 million vehicles sold in 2023 that are electric vehicles. And so it's more they just didn't go as quickly as I think some might have been projecting after the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. But the reality is we're just at the sort of starting line for things like the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program, which is going to put a charger every 50 miles on our interstates and highways. Obviously, that's going to be really important for rural communities. But it's also with the charging fueling infrastructure program that it created, it's going to be putting charging in communities across the country and really reducing part of those things around range anxiety. So I think what we're seeing right now is that sort of middle of the market moment where we're just about to see that tipping of the scale. The other thing I would mention is this is a global effort. So right now, the transition is happening globally, and it's about how do we make sure that the U.S. maintains our automotive leadership, that we give consumers the best choices for the best vehicles moving forward. And we've got to make sure that we're developing a pathway to build electric and to make sure we're driving electric in the future. But again, there are going to be space for a lot of different fuel types, especially when we think about generation as well.
And Ben, you brought this up in your last question, because many people in remote and rural areas do have concerns about how EVs are going to be operating, you know, in extremely cold temperatures. And then you mentioned, you know, not having the infrastructure for charging stations. So how do you see EVs overcoming these challenges?
There's a couple different things. I mean, I think rural communities have a different dynamic than maybe dense urban communities. And so you know, charging at home is actually one of the greatest benefits of transportation electrification. And I think rural communities are going to see those benefits in a huge, huge way. When you can plug in at home and sell fuel, that's a really, really compelling opportunity to get rid of one of the challenges that might exist for rural communities. The other part is it's not range anxiety as much as it's range uncertainty. And I think, you know, the reality is we currently have 100,000 chargers across the country. They're just not as visible as a gas station. And you don't take into account that self-fueling dynamic. Although, of course, you know, rural communities and farming communities have long since bunkered fuel, but that's not the same thing as having access to a highly distributed electric grid that's going to be able to support electrification right now. And the last thing is, you know, these vehicles are just now entering into that stage of hitting the range needs and the capacity needs for a lot of these rural communities. And I think, you know, that's going to mean that those vehicles are going to meet those needs right now for those rural communities to effectively do what they need to do every single day, to drive where they need to go and to be able to have access to charging so that they never are going to have a concern moving forward. Although we have some way, you know, we have a little bit of time before we get to all of that being fully distributed across the U.S. It's being built right now.
And Jeff, wrapping up our conversation with you, you know, a new GREET model is expected to be released sometime soon, which will help shed light on how corn can be used in the sustainable aviation fuel discussion. So what concerns do you have with an update to this model?
Well, and I think that question is very much related to this conversation. We've been told repeatedly that, hey, as electrification sort of takes over in the light duty fleet, there are going to be all these opportunities for ethanol in the harder to electrify sectors, aviation, maritime, et cetera. And that's only going to be true if we get the modeling right and if crop-based biofuels like ethanol are eligible for some of the tax credits that were in the Inflation Reduction Act. So we are keeping a very close, watchful eye on the development of this new GREET model from the federal government. It will make or break the opportunity for ethanol to participate in this enormous opportunity for aviation fuel.
Well, there's a lot of opportunities to keep our eye on with electric vehicles and biofuels. Jeff, Ben, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Hannah.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Huneke walks us through U.S. cattle sales in this week's Map It Out.
Data from the most recent Census of Agriculture shows which states made the most in cattle sales from 2017 to 2022. This map takes a closer look at those numbers. Texas led the way with nearly $15.5 billion in sales. Kansas was second with $13.6 billion, and Nebraska was third with $12.2 billion. Total sales were slightly more than $89 billion. According to USDA's latest cattle report in January, the nation's herd is roughly 87.2 million. That number is down 15% from 2019, which was the inventory's most recent peak at 94.8 million head. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Huneke.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee on Agriculture, Rural Development, FDA, and other agencies will hold a hearing Thursday to discuss fiscal year 2025 budget requests for the FDA. USDA's yearly National Hemp Report comes out on Wednesday. And finally, look for Philip Brasher and Noah Wicks at the annual meeting of the North American Agricultural Journalists in Washington, D.C., Monday and Tuesday. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel. Take care of yourself.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.